First substitute House Bill 413, Student Mental Health Amendments.
Substitute House Bill 518, State Construction Code Modifications by Representative
Animal Care Amendments, Senator Plum.
Public Health Orders Amendments by Representative Bartle.
Licensing Modifications, all in favor?
Legislative Committee Staff Requirement.
Paleontological Landmark Amendments by Representative
School Closure Amendments, Senator Bramble.
Senator Bramble.
Moved on circle, fourth substitute House Bill 395.
First motion I need to make, Bill 272.
Well, that certainly was something. The 45-day Utah legislative session is over. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. Another year, another session. This week on State Street, we're breaking down the bills that made it through, but also the vibes.
It was a weird one. There were bills about heavy topics like child abuse and access to public bathrooms for transgender people.
But also sports and revitalization. And a lot of questions about Utah's future.
And did we mention that it's an election year?
That may have something to do with lawmakers breaking yet another record. They passed 591 bills.
Plus, we spoke with Governor Spencer Cox about his take on all of it.
Here's how the final night went down.
Honestly, kind of up and down. They did go until midnight, but there were a couple of record scratch moments. They tried to resurrect a bill that would prohibit teachers from displaying pride flags or other, quote, political imagery. It was a few minutes of scramble in the Senate, and then it failed. Twice.
There were a couple of moments that got contentious, like when things got fiery when a bill Democrats said unfairly targeted the Salt Lake County District Attorney's Office went up for debate.
Without getting into the weeds, it essentially forces only the Salt Lake County DA's office to track every single thing they do on criminal cases down to the minute. If they don't prosecute cases, the Utah Supreme Court can. It also gives the governor the power to remove only the Salt Lake County DA.
This is a vindictive bill aimed at the actions of one district attorney who was doing his job prosecuting crime. Interestingly, and now is accused of not prosecuting crime vigorously enough.
This is an attack not only on our district attorney, but this is an attack on Salt Lake City, and this is an attack on us as representatives from Salt Lake City. You talk about not playing politics. We're playing politics right now. I'm very disappointed in where this is going. I will not be voting for this bill.
I rise in strong opposition to this bill. I think we ought to be ashamed of ourselves trying to go after an elected official, but yet we stood on this body for and let another elected official get away with going after a child. This is a disgrace.
It ultimately passed, but some Republicans joined all Democrats in voting no.
The biggest thing that came out of the night was the budget. We'll get into that later this episode, but it was huge. $29.4 billion, a record.
Speaking of records, the Utah legislature passed 591 bills, and they introduced more than 900. Let's just say this, we're not going to go through all of them here. I promise you, most lawmakers haven't even read them all. Mind-numbing. And I'm tired, but I only wanted to participate in defenestration a handful of times, so that's good.
If you want a big, detailed list, we have that for you at the KUER website and linked in the show notes. Even then, it doesn't cover all 591 of them. Sorry, laser pointer amendments and animal massage therapy. Both passed, by the way. What we do want to do is come back around to the big things we've mentioned this season. Sage, close your eyes for a minute and take a trip down memory lane with me to 45 days ago.
Sean, we were so young and carefree. I didn't have visible bags under my eyes, nor was I slurping down 80 ounces of Diet Coke to keep myself alert. Just your standard Utah-sized cup of 40 ounces.
These were the topics we thought would be big this session. Energy, water, childcare, transportation, housing affordability, taxes, diversity, equity, and inclusion, transgender rights. So, how'd we do, Sage?
Not too shabby. They hit on a lot of them, and those last two topics came through the legislature speedy fast.
DEI, The legislature banned diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and hiring practices in public schools, universities, and government agencies.
Transgender rights. There was the bill that restricts transgender people from using public bathrooms that align with their gender identities.
Once those two bills were out of the way, it was on to a bunch of other stuff. We covered energy independence earlier this season. Several energy bills passed the session, and a number of them give the state the power to prop up the declining coal industry.
We also touched on water. As we dove into it, we found this year was really a continuation of big water legislation that passed 2 years ago. Lawmakers are trying to see how that overhaul is working. A couple of small bills passed this year, but nothing groundbreaking.
That leaves a couple of things that we predicted that we haven't gotten around to, like transportation. There were some budget items and a bill that would require large transit authorities to give municipalities they serve detailed reports on things like ridership and expenditures.
But no huge overhauls. Speaking of infrastructure, though, there were those two big Salt Lake City downtown revitalization bills that passed. They'll create a framework to raise $2 billion in taxes to spruce things up, all in the hopes of attracting major league sports teams.
And childcare. One bill did fail. Senate Minority Leader Luz Escamilla had a bill that would have converted 6 empty office buildings in Salt Lake County to childcare facilities. It had a fiscal note of $5 million that would have gone in the budget. But with what Republicans called a socks and underwear budget, that wasn't making the cut.
One that did pass just upped the amount of children an unlicensed childcare facility could look after. It went from 6 to 8.
That same bill, sponsored by Republican Representative Susan Pulsifer, included a small tax credit as well. Lawmakers voted to expand the child tax credit to include children under the age of 5, so families could get up to $1,000 per child to help pay for kiddo needs.
Housing affordability and homelessness. These issues kind of fell to the background until the last minute. Cox wanted $343 million to do a couple of things: fund a starter home program and fund mental health and homelessness services. The legislature's first budget numbers barely mentioned those. In the end, it wasn't the program the governor was pushing, but affordable housing got $300 million and homelessness services just got over $66
million. Oh, and taxes. They did get to that along with the rest of the budget. And we'll get into more detail after the break. You're listening to State Street.
Hi, I'm Caroline Ballard. I'm going to take a wild guess that you like listening to podcasts because you like learning. And I'm going to take another wild guess that you sometimes like putting that newfound knowledge to the test. Well, I have good news. State Street is hosting another politics-themed trivia night. Join us on April 24th at Fisher Brewing. We'll have more info for you in the coming weeks. And who knows, what you hear on the podcast might just show up in a question. Happy listening.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. In the final hours of the legislative session, the Utah legislature passed a record-breaking $29.4 billion budget.
Billions!
Some of the big-ticket items include
education. Lawmakers approved a 5% increase in the weighted pupil unit. That's how much is spent per student. That's almost a $212 million increase. They also allocated $40 million more dollars to the school voucher program. That was a big controversial bill last session. More than $100 million on school safety, which would be used to put an armed guard of some sort in every Utah school. It would also install panic buttons in every classroom.
$1.2 billion was also included for new infrastructure investments, like a new transit stop at Point of the Mountain and an air traffic control tower at the St. George Airport.
$10 million in additional investments in Great Salt Lake was also included. And for the fourth year in a row, lawmakers agreed to a tax cut. This time, there was an income tax cut. It'll mostly benefit top earners. The average Utah family will see an extra $60 in their pocket a year.
To talk about that budget and more, we caught up with the Gov on the last day of the session.
Governor, thank you for joining us. End of another session.
We made it here. This is the day we've all been looking forward to.
In a sentence, how would you describe this session?
Big. Oh, yeah, that's a word, but I would describe it as a big session. We were able to do some transformational and generational things this legislative session.
Do you believe the formula of the legislative process has really changed from here on out over the past couple of years? Seen big controversial bills move really fast at the beginning of the session. Do you think that's just going to be the status quo from here on out?
Potentially, and I mean, I know there's some criticism of that. I would make a counter argument there, in that because they're not waiting until the last day of the session, those bills, and because of some of the pushback that we gave last year, those bills actually get more attention than they would have if they were passing on day 45. I would also say that, and I'm grateful for the legislature. I heard some members of the minority party came to me and said, "Hey, we really appreciate the work you did last year in asking us to give more process." So those bills got much longer hearings than they would normally get. They were heard in committees in both houses. They didn't suspend the rules like they did last year. There were 3 to 4 hour hearings in some of those, and everybody got an opportunity to testify. And so I thought that was a much more thorough process than what we've had in the past.
You can't propose legislation yourself, but you can propose a budget. We're working through the final finishing touches on that today. Is there something you really wanted from the legislature that you're probably just not going to get right now?
This will surprise you, but the answer is no. In fact, we've been a little spoiled in that we were able to get so much of what we wanted. Now, that was not true a week ago, but it is true now. And I'm grateful the final pieces were the homelessness pieces that were not included in the budget last week. And they've been so great to work with us and get us. It wasn't as much as we wanted. So I probably could have used some bigger numbers in what we asked for, but we got all the stuff we asked for and the things that we really needed this session. And honestly, on the housing attainability, it exceeded my biggest hopes. We found a very creative way to actually get more money towards housing attainability and creating our starter home program in the state. And I'm over the moon excited about that.
Looking ahead to future budgets, we're seeing estimates on revenue kind of come back to a more pre-pandemic level. Obviously, federal aid is not available anymore. The legislature continues to cut taxes. Is there a tipping point? Do you see future budgeting processes being a little bit different than the last 3-4 years?
So we're still growing, and the good news is we are growing at a more normal and kind of sustained rate. And so I'm really happy with the trajectory right now, especially considering where the rest of the nation is. There are lots of states out there right now who have huge budget deficits, and we don't. There certainly is a tipping point, and we've had those conversations. You know, what does that look like if we continue to lower the income tax rate, which I've been supportive of? What do we replace that with, and where is that balance? So I think those conversations will happen over the next year, and we'll figure out how to balance that.
The legislature passed a bill that restricts access to elected officials' public calendars. You signed that bill into law. Can you give us a little bit more insight onto that decision?
Sure, yeah. So that's something that came to us via the legislature. That has always been their interpretation of the law. And that was obviously there was a legal proceeding with the AG's office. Look, not here to defend the AG's office. I believe that it's really important for me to release my calendar. I've always done that, even though I didn't feel like I was obligated to under the law. We've always just done that by choice. We'll continue to do that by choice. And so that was important. These are part-time legislators. They have their lives outside of this, their work calendars, all of that combined. And so I support the legislature in that.
That said, do you encourage other elected officials to be as transparent
always,
as possible?
Yeah, I would always encourage people to let the media and others know what they're doing. Yes.
This is an election year. I think everything
it
that
is.
We've seen and done over the past year or so has been colored by what's coming up in November. This week, the Democratic caucus said partly because of that, it feels like in some cases the legislature focused on politics rather than policy, whether it was rhetoric or bills that were actually debated on the floor. How do you think the upcoming election played a role in the business conducted at the Capitol this year?
Well, look, every 2 years is an election year for members of the House, and you know, every 4 years for so half the senators every 2 years. And so, I don't feel like it was any different than any other election year. That's always been the case. We've always had message bills. There is a national fervor to it. I think that has changed over the course of time. We used to say that all politics is local in kind of Poli-Sci 101. Now I think all politics is national, so there's always a little bit of an influence there, but I think that's just kind of par for the course, and we can expect that every 2 years.
What have you done to stay sane over the last 45 days?
What have I done? I've tried to eat healthier. I've lost 18 pounds. I'm really proud of that. I ran 7 miles this morning, and that's kind of helping me to keep my brain in a at least a moderately decent place as we head into the final day of the session.
Governor, thank you so much
for
your time.
Thank you, guys.
One last thing the governor said he really didn't like is the record number of bills, like nearing the 600 kind of record number.
Everyone hates this. Cox said Speaker Mike Schultz promised him earlier in the session they wouldn't set a new record. Senate President Stuart Adams said multiple times last week that he's not proud of how many bills there were. And that number has steadily gone up over the years.
So why? We have some theories. Some of it has to do with the big election later this year, or maybe the time crunch of 45 days to get all these new laws on the books. Lawmakers just love making laws, I guess. This brings us back to the vibes. On the last night, everyone gets a little loopy. In the House, they sing and perform skits at the end. This year, there was a barbershop quartet with red bow ties and all.
Dearest Mr. Speaker, now it's time.
The Senate is much more low-key. No skits, no videos, but a lot of kind words and congratulations are shared between lawmakers from both parties.
So it goes out on a high note, but that isn't the full picture.
You've already heard how the last night got a bit contentious at times, so you won't be surprised to know that overall, Dems were not a fan of this session.
We as Democrats can't accomplish anything if we don't have the support of our Republican colleagues, and we can always focus on the stuff that we don't agree on, which is probably about 90% of what happened this legislative session. For me, this session has been more political. And I feel like a lot of policy has been neglected for the politics.
I am hopeful that after session we can all sit down with the majority leadership team and have a very honest conversation about what went well and what didn't go so well. But unfortunately, while that it's been an open door conversation, a lot of it is, why do these horrible bills just keep coming every single day? The bathroom, you know, the transgender bathroom bill, the DEI bill, these education bills. It's been a tough session. It seems like we've had to ward off a lot of policy issues that we view to be harmful to our community on a constant basis.
That was House Minority Leader Angela Romero and House Minority Whip Jen Daly Provo.
It bears repeating again. This is an election year. In our interview, Cox insisted that it's like this every 2 years. But I think Democrats would beg to differ.
There was another kind of weird moment in all of this, too, that sucked up a lot of time and air in the room. Utah State Board of Education member Natalie Klein. She insinuated in a social media post that a high school basketball player was not biologically female. Klein called out the girl publicly with her face, school, and jersey number all attached. But the girl is not transgender.
Several officials, including Governor Cox and even the Utah State Board of Education, publicly called for Klein's resignation. That's because they didn't have the power to impeach her. But the legislature does.
In the end, the legislature opted to censure her instead. Even though the girl's family lobbied for them to impeach, she did not step down. And now, Natalie Klein says she's running for school board again.
So what does this all mean for Utah? And what does it mean for you?
When it comes to the legislation itself, there is so much of it, it's kind of hard to quantify.
But you can quantify the budget. It not only funds a lot of those bills that get passed, but also allocates money to things you might use every day, like roads, buses, or state parks. I asked the governor why you should care about the budget just before the session began in January.
Because what happens during these 45 days, not just the budget, but the 500 plus bills that pass, influence and impact your lives far more than what is happening in Washington, D.C.
We also saw an emboldened Republican supermajority. There are fewer Democrats in the body than even just a couple years ago, and they have increasingly less power.
Democrats do exist in Utah, and they're keen to grow their numbers in November. Lots of rhetoric from the Dems this session on if people are upset with what happens at the Capitol, they should vote for change.
There was this strategy for pushing divisive bills through the opening days of the session. Cox says they've improved that over the previous years and that these bills get even more time than before. But it still shortens the window for the public to comment.
That brings us to transparency. There were efforts to limit access to lawmakers, like that move to make their work calendars private. Some bills also made records of meetings around water and the Military Installation Development Authority private and not part of the public record. And Speaker of the House Mike Schultz went so far as to say that it isn't reporters' jobs to hold the powerful accountable. He said that is up to voters to do that.
But lots of people don't have time to make it to the Capitol, sit through committee meetings, and talk one-on-one with legislators. They rely on the press to be informed.
Joel Campbell teaches journalism and ethics at Brigham Young University. He wrote an opinion piece for the Salt Lake Tribune calling the number of bills blocking transparency this session astounding. Campbell is also an advisory board member for KUER.
When reporters don't have access, voters like you don't have access.
And all the time any of us get to figure it all out is 45 days. Blink, and you'll miss it.
So don't blink. That does it for this season of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. A big shout out to everyone who makes this podcast possible. Every step of the way, there's our executive producer, Caroline Ballard.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark edit the podcast every week.
Thanks also to our stellar digital team, Jim Hill, Eleanor Gomberg, and Raquel Davis.
Oh, and we've got trivia! Come out for trivia April 24th at Fisher Brewing in Salt Lake City. Pit your knowledge against a team of lawmakers. By then, we should all be rested up and ready to go.
Catch you on the flip side. Okay.
No pressure.
Let me know when you're ready, Sage.
All right. Three, two, wait.
I'm starting.
You're right. Yeah, I was in the wrong part of the talk, so we're starting off great.
From KUER.